Blog Talk Radio.
That's our cue, everyone. And welcome to our Sunday meditation with Hari Das, known to all of us as Dr. Jerry. And today, of course, is June the 6th, 2021. We are so blessed to have Dr. Jerry, Hari Das, in this case, as our has been for quite some time already, our expert health teacher and advisor. And now he comes to our forum as our teacher and mentor for meditation. And of course, this is just the beginning part of understanding a little bit more about meditation and having gone through two or three meditations already with Hari Das. So we appreciate you, Hari Das, for being here with us today. We thank you for your graciousness and kind and caring service for now in meditation. And with that, I think I'm just going to go ahead and hand over our call to you. And thank you again for being here with all of us. All yours, Dr. Jerry. Oops. Oh, you know what? I better get him on the line here. There you are.
Yeah, I was
thank
muted.
You. Yes.
Thank you, Jane. Let me know if I'm on a headset, and sometimes it cuts in and out, and I'll go to speakerphone. So, okay.
Okay. It's perfect. Yes. Welcome.
Really happy to be here, and I'm happy that you're here, Jane. A week ago, I was attempting to get on this line, and I didn't quite understand the protocol, so I bailed off. So it's really nice to have you here. And
no
I was
problem.
Telling Jane
it's
that
great.
I would... That's good. It is great. I really want to get in touch with where people are at. We've had a few sessions. We've had a few meditations, and they are helping us to interiorize. And it's, I think, real important to understand that meditation, it's a process. It's not like you sit down and gain enlightenment in that particular moment. And a lot of people practice meditations for so many different reasons. It's not always about enlightenment. Sometimes it's just stress relief. A lot of people are guided to do meditation because their lives are just overwhelming and they need that for stress relief. Some people, desire that sense of peace and calm, which meditation can bring. Some people appreciate it for its health benefits. All of these things are very viable. It actually can extend one's life and certainly add years to your life and life to your years. So some people seek it for those reasons. Some just to sleep better. Some actually for prosperity, to tune into that place where they can tap into that unlimited prosperity that we all have as ultimately our souls inherit this entire kingdom of this universe. So there are many reasons people are guided to meditate and into meditation, and then there is the ultimate yogi that realizes that this world is a combination of, or a culmination of, a series of lessons in order to merge back with the ultimate consciousness, the divine consciousness, and that's that liberation. And so there's many steps along the way. And I believe ultimately, and I've studied with yogis, a few of them, one of them was what's referred to in India as a Himalayan yogi. Studied with him for about 30 years, over 30 years actually. And just prior to that, prior to starting studying with my own teacher, I actually was around Swami Muktananda, and he was the one that gave me the name Hari Das. It was shortly before he left his body in 1982. So it's not a name I've used much over the years, because my spiritual practice has been pretty private. It's been something that I don't go out publicly with. And this family is the first time I've exposed that side of myself, but it is a very valuable side of myself. It is what I feel is my culmination of being here. And if I can impart anything, you know, in this lifetime, it would be that spiritual knowledge, because ultimately that's what we take with us. And you know me, you know, of course, I'm Dr. Jerry, and I like to give tools strong in these times. And our bodies are under lots of challenges, as we've discussed before. And we need these tools, these things that I seek out, actually, and discover to help aid us in our keeping our bodies strong, because that's real important. We are here in this world now, and it's real important as body, mind, and spirit, because we are all of that, to keep each of those strong and attuned as greatly as we can. And, you know, because we're here, we have to pay attention to the body. If the body's not strong, then the mind will become weak, and you can't pay attention to the spirit. So that's one of the reasons that Hatha Yoga came into existence. Yoga being ultimately is the definition of yoga is union with the divine. And there's different forms of yoga, and one of those, and of course in the West, when we think of yoga, we think of Hatha Yoga, and that's just one form. But Hatha Yoga is concerned with the physical body and getting the physical body stronger and able to not only be strong, but be relaxed and be able to sit in a kind of meditation posture so you can actually not think about the body. Because if your body's strong and you're healthy, you're not thinking about it. It's the only time we really think much about our bodies is when we have a pain or discomfort. Oh, gosh, my knee's hurting all the time, or my back hurts, or I've got this headache. So we're thinking about these things, and that's why Hatha Yoga, or the physical aspect of yoga, is real important. And part of that is also nutrition, and we cover that. And there's many reasons that we cover that. And I want to briefly touch on that even before we start to talk about yoga and meditation, because that is foundational. In fact, the lowest chakra is very concerned with our survival and the physical body, and the food and the water and the things that this body needs. But that's what anchors us. That the lowest chakra doesn't mean it's any less important. That's important because it's part of the whole stair-step process. It's part of our spiritual being. Each of the chakras has a reflection into the spirit, but also it's physical. And our physical manifestation, if you get right down to the medical side, each chakra has a nerve plexus that relates to the physical aspect of our body, and it controls certain physical things, like some of the chakras are related to digestion and things like that, and some more heart rate, heart, lung, and some, more mental activity, things like that. But they're all related to spirit and body. And as we progress spiritually, we begin to draw more into that central place where we become more attuned to our chakras and can live from that place, can live from that place of our chakras. And then ultimately transcend each of those levels of chakra, and then at the time that we leave this body, exit the correct way, exit so that we are actually in that place of liberation. But I think it's real important for us, especially at these times of transition, especially with what we're facing, and there's so many obstacles that we're up against in the world, and there's so many things that this family knows about in terms of where we're going. And I like to call it, I actually, rather than mention, put it into a word, because these days we have to kind of keep everything in terms of kind of code words. I like to call it the farmer's market. When we have our visit to the farmer's market, We want to be our best selves possible. We want to be in that place where we are attuned to our chakras, so we are strong, so we aren't pulled away into actually the delusions that when these eggs hatch at the farmer's market can lure us into. It's real important, I think, to keep that inner strength, to keep that inner perspective, and realize what is really, truly most important as we go into this new life, this transition, and we are as strong as possible, and we can be an example for those people that we go to help as we help restore this world, because this world is in great need of restoration. So it's real important that we're our strongest selves. And just to touch a little bit on the physical again and nutrition, I do want to say something about that place inside our brain that is really important to have active. That is the pineal gland, because the pineal gland is where you actually, it's that doorway spiritually. It's a physical structure inside, right behind between the medulla oblongata and the forehead. So it's like that place, that doorway to divinity. And it's very interesting that in the past, gosh, I don't know, decades, many decades, it's almost like that there's been a systematic attack on the pineal gland, because the glyphosates helped to calcify it. And, you know, glyphosate started back in the started heavy use, at least back in the mid-90s with the GMOs and you know, spraying heavily on our food. And fluoride is another thing that calcifies the pineal gland. In other words, makes it very difficult to awaken and kind of keeps that doorway closed. Fluoride, which has been put in our water for many decades, and dentists have used it. You know, we go to the dentist's office and they fluoridate our, you know, all of these things, it seems almost systematic. The EMFs have a calcifying effect or an inhibiting effect on that doorway of the pineal gland opening. And 5G is just, you know, exponentially worse. Another thing is the things they spray from the air, aluminum and other soft metals, all of these things are working against us, and that's what makes it so important that we continue to talk about ways to protect ourselves and ways to prevent these attacks that seem almost systematic, almost on purpose. And one of the things that I've discovered recently is algae is one of those decalcifiers of the pineal gland. So it's another great reason for the Zealous product, the blue-green algae, in a very pure form and a very potent form. And I think it's a great tool for us to keep ourselves well and keep us strong. And so that's just another enlightening thing I've come across in my research, that it is one of the powerful decalcifiers and one of the powerful detoxifiers to help get rid of these toxins that we're constantly exposed to. So I think it's real important that we don't forget this, because, and we don't forget the physical, and keep ourselves physically strong, especially given what we're headed into. And body's strong, it helps the mind to become strong, and that gives us the foundation to live a spiritual life. So that's real, real important, and we can't ignore it. And so beyond that, I kind of want to open up the line and ask if, regarding questions. I want to figure out where people are, and no question is an irrelevant question. It's really important for me to understand this family and where you're at. So if you can please ask any question on anything from nutrition to physical hatha yoga to pranayama, which is also called raja yoga, to spirituality in general, to religion, or whatever you want to discuss. I really want to kind of tap into this family. The more I get to know this family, Jane, the more I realize how amazing it is. And I'm really blessed to be a part and a member of this family. So please ask any questions that you might have, and we'll go on from there, and we'll go into a meditation at the end. Okay?
Okay, very good. All right, everyone. You know what to do. Just press 1, and I will see your name or your phone number light up. So, again, comments, questions for Hari Das or Dr. Jerry. So don't be shy. Go ahead and press 1. So difficult sometimes to be the first person to ask a question. So, all right.
Hopefully
I'll
prodded enough areas that we, yeah, go ahead and start, Jane.
Okay. All right. So we, you know, I think we all understand the value, or perhaps maybe we need a little bit of a review as to, you know, we're in such a difficult situation right now, being challenged with what is happening with vaccines and all of that, and family and masks, and at least for the most part, people are no longer wearing masks, but there's people are still in fear. So how does meditation help people to become fearless rather than fearful, especially these times? Why meditation as one of those areas really to utilize or to have as one of your precious tools to help you for the fear that's out there? And also in terms of how it also helps to heal the body, because that's really also key, because as you elevate yourself in frequency, vibrational frequency, et cetera, you also get to a level in meditation to where you can really begin to heal yourself energetically. That's my question.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a good question, and it's, we could go on for a whole hour with the answer, but I'll try to be brief.
Okay.
It's a great question, great way to start, so let's do that. The one thing that I will say is, you know, I've studied from different teachers, but my main teacher who I met in 1982, Swami Satchaswarananda, his entire title was Swami Satchaswarananda Giri Vidyaratna Babaji, is his whole title. We call him Baba, just for short. And I spent over 30 years with this amazing individual. And he told me right up front in the very early days that there is evil in this world, so you can't deny it. There is light and dark. And part of why that is, you might say, well, God created this world. Why did God create evil? But in order to manifest this world, in order to have it create, it had to go into this polarity. And so everything in this universe is polarized. If you think about that, it goes down to the atomic level. The protons and the neutrons and the electrons, like the protons are positive, the neutrons are neutral, and the electrons are negative. And it creates these charges that allow them to create molecules, which allow them to create life. And life tends to, because of that polarity, be a spiral. DNA is a spiral. The planets spiral around the sun. The galaxy is a spiral moving object. And our galaxy moves with other galaxies around a central point in the universe. Everything is this spiral, this polarity. And if you think about it, male and female is a polarity, which is necessary for this creation to exist. You have to have male and female. You have to have that polarity and that attraction. Light and dark, cold and hot, all of these polarities, if you could continue to delve into it, but there's good and evil. In order to maintain this creation, there has to be that. And the one thing that we're seeing now currently is it's becoming very clear to us, the distinction between good and evil. It's much easier to see, and that's because we are evolving as a species. We are getting energetically more aligned to that to that spiritual place. And in that spiritual place, with our spiritual eye and that spiritual vibration, which isn't a more elevated place, we're able to have a greater discernment. So we can see it as before, maybe, you know, 20, 30 years ago, if you think of your own, you know, existence, you know, as you were growing up or going through school, you know, you knew the difference between good and bad, but you trusted a lot of things. You trusted the people like in power and your doctors and the politicians and people like that. But then now we're seeing this avarice. We're seeing, you know, a lot of it's just based on money and greed and power and control, and it's just out and out evil. You know, at the extreme, it's just evil. It's dark. And so as we gravitate more into that place of light, it becomes more apparent to us, and we don't want to go there, because the dark is that place that tends to want to pull you down and into creation, and it wants to help short-circuit your spiritual evolution. And part of that, one of the most powerful agents to short-circuit that is fear. If you are in fear, you're short-circuiting your own spiritual growth, and you're constantly bombarded with fear. If you turn on the TV, if you listen to the news, if you sometimes even chat with certain friends, if you're in Facebook or whatever, there's a lot of fear-mongering going on, and it really sabotages your spiritual growth, so you're better off turning that off. Just be aware it's there, but really know that it's kind of designed to create an attraction to pull you back into that consciousness, back into that frequency that doesn't support you. And so meditation is one of the greatest ways to distance yourself and strengthen yourself and insulate yourself from those attacks, because the divine consciousness is completely fearless. The divine consciousness is totally tranquility. The divine consciousness is totally, the emotion is just joy. Ever new joy. There's no fear there. Fear can't exist. It's like darkness cannot exist when you turn on the light. Light always wins. You can't, if you turn the light on inside yourself, darkness just goes away. And part of the practice of meditation is lighting up that spirit within you, tapping into that really is the truth, that which you are. That original creation, that original causation, that original spiritual spark that started all of this, as you tune back into that, you get closer and closer to that place where none of these things can touch you. This world cannot touch you. And as you strengthen that, as you create that insulation from this world, you begin to, and yes, yogis have demonstrated it in the past. Jesus was, in fact, an enlightened being, a yogi. And the very powerful, these yogis can, in India, they call it siddhis. You get powers. And some of the early stages of those powers are, yes, you just naturally can heal yourself just by allowing the energies to flow correctly in your body, so that disease states are eliminated, because your body has an innate intelligence. Your body, the DNA in every cell of your body, when it's communicated properly and energetically and everything's in, you know, primed and flowing, disease can't exist, because you're communicating that perfect reflection of health that is in your DNA. You're communicating that perfectly. And that's why we do things to help keep our bodies strong, is we want to keep that innate energy able to be in a top level of being able to flow. But the simple fact that you meditate actually begins to clean that out. Literally, you know, when you get to a place in your meditation where you're actually doing the pranayama, and you're in yoga, there's an understanding that even in past lives, you had certain lessons, certain things that maybe, you know, it's like we know it as karma. you have something maybe you did in a past life that is still lodged in your energetic body. You may not be aware of it. There's a thing in yoga called Prarabdha Karma. And in Prarabdha Karma, that's the whole picture of you. That's your whole energy from the beginning of time. And you carry a little bit of that with you, and that's why you continue to take birth. And in your, and these are lodged, another word they use, they're samskaras. They're lodged in your spine, in the energies in your spine, and they become blocks. And as you begin to work with the chakras and you work with your pranayama, you will literally wear down those samskaras. Those vrittis, or another word, those little blocks that are in your spine. And sometimes in yoga, you might all of a sudden realize, wow, you know, something opened up. You might have a strong emotion, and you might feel like, ooh, you there's a part of yourself that just kind of remembered, and you cleared something out. That may have taken many lifetimes, but because you actually worked on it and you actually focused on it, you can clear out these kinds of things very quickly. And Yogananda was really insistent that Kriya Yoga was like the quick path, because it gets right into the technique that works on those samskaras, that actually you sit down and you work on those blocks in your spine, and you eventually clear them out. And you become enlightened, but along the way, you create health also, because those blocks are not only blocking your physical evolution, but they can also manifest as disease states. So you really want to, it's real important, I believe, that we use meditation, especially us in this family, because of the huge responsibility that we will all soon have. And it's real important to keep ourselves strong, keep ourselves well, keep ourselves healthy and spiritually attuned. So Jane, that was kind of a quick overview of your question.
Thank you. That was really great. Thank you. I have a couple more questions. There aren't any others that have lit up, that have pressed one. But another thing that that might help people also is that, as, you know, talking about going within, is that what's essential in meditation is that you stay present. So you're not thinking about the family, you're not thinking about the present. I mean, you're not thinking about the past, you know, what I did in the past, what I want to do in the future. You just stay present. And presence is, we always talk a lot about being in the present. So that's very, very key, because when you meditate, you are in the present. You learn how to let go of all of the distractions. You let go of everything else and just concentrate. You don't even have to concentrate, just be. Be in the present in terms of the focus of the meditation. And that will really also help people as well to just kind of really tune in and go within. And then pranayama, maybe you could explain a little bit about that too. So those two things, and I think perhaps maybe we'll be ready to go into a meditation. Maybe after somebody might have a question, but that would be my suggestion for right now, since I don't see anyone else raising their hands.
Well, many, many years ago, back in the early 80s, maybe even late 70s, I read, there was a book by Ram Dass, Be Here Now, and it really struck me. And he had met his teacher that was a Himalayan yogi, Neem Karoli Baba. And he spent a lot of time with Neem Karoli Baba in a place in India called Kanchi. And I was blessed to have been able to spend some time in Kanchi. And it is a great vibration there. There's a holy man that spent his life in and around Kanchi. And Neem Karoli Baba was really attuned to the present moment. My Baba was the same way. Muktananda, that I spent time with, was also the same way. All of these yogis really stress the fact of being here now in this moment. They stress the fact that if you are living in the past, that's just dead. That's just, it becomes a negative energy, and it will pull you backwards. It'll pull you down. You recognize it's there. You recognize that you've had a life. You've had prior things you've done. You've had prior relationships. But the only thing that's real is right here, right now. The future, if you're thinking about the future and what you're going to do and these kinds of things, be aware that, yes, it's there. Yes, I have this schedule. I have this calendar of things that I, you know, my responsibilities and my obligations. So you're aware that it's there, but that's it, that awareness, and then you cut it, because what you have right now is where your life is. And where your life is right now is the only thing that is real. Today I had to go into a Walmart. Just like, you know, you could like dread it and go, oh, good grief, I have to go into a Walmart, and you could have just kind of a negative feeling about it. And I realized, if you're in the moment, just as I'm even walking towards the doors, you know, I'm aware of who I am. I'm aware of breathing. I'm aware of the feeling of the sun on my skin. I'm aware of just being there. And it just changes your whole mood, no matter what you're doing. And the yogis know that it doesn't matter. One of the things that Mahatma Gandhi did was he broke through the caste system in India, because he was a Brahmin caste, born into the Brahmin caste, meaning that's the priest class. But he would go clean toilets and do it with an attitude of just being there cleaning the toilet, or making his own clothing. And just being there making his own clothing. And when you're there totally, no matter what you're doing, it doesn't matter if you're cleaning a toilet or doing dishes or making your clothing or sweeping the floor, if you are there and you're truly there, you can be in total joy, you can be in total ecstasy. Because the moment you realize that you are there and you are present, that joy begins to come in. You know, it's the fact that, oh, I have to clean the toilet, and you start, these negative things come in, and it's like, oh, somebody's making me clean this toilet, or somebody's making me clean this floor, and it's just all negative. Your whole being just becomes dark. You're letting it affect you. And you start thinking about, oh, I can't wait till, you know, 3 o'clock I'm going to leave, and I can't wait to get out of here. It's just a dark thing that comes in, because you're losing that moment. And this moment you have is your most precious thing, because it's really all that exists. And if you can be in that moment and practice that, that's a great meditation of its own, is being in the moment. And in terms of prana is the energy. Some in Chinese medicine is called qi. Japanese medicine, they call it ki. In India, they call it prana. It's the energy flows in the body, and we have hundreds, even thousands of different energy flows in our body. But there's 3 main energy flows, and they're close to the spine. So as you get better at meditating, you come into an understanding of those 3 main energy flows. 2 of them are on either side of the spine. On the left side is the Ida, and on the right side is the Pingala. And the Ida and the Pingala are polar, they're charged. The Ida is negative and the Pingala is positive. And in the middle, right up the center of the spine, is the Sushumna. And the Sushumna is where, when you have enlightenment, that begins to open up. And the energy begins to flow up the Sushumna. And then it'll come down either the Ida or the Pingala. But that's what you speak of if you're talking as people activating the kundalini. But what happens, because the ida is negative and the pingala is positive, eventually as you meditate, you start to create this magnetic force that eventually generates a spark at the base of your spine and begins to open that doorway of the shushumna. And that's the kundalini activating. And some gurus like Muktananda are Shaktipat gurus. He was. He'd hit you on the top of the head or grab your third eye, and an electric current would go through your body, and it would activate the kundalini. And, you know, that's positive, but it's negative because it was temporary. But it was just to help nudge you along the way. But you've got to, and Muktananda was big on this, you got to do the work. You got to do the daily meditation. He can't take you there. No quote-unquote guru worth their salt is going to take you there. It's all personal responsibility. My Baba, right away in the very beginning, because when I went to see him, he's like, you know, kind of like sussing out why you came. And I'm sitting there in front of him, and he's kind of saying, well, you know, why did you come, and why were you interested in meeting? And I said, I've always been searching for a guru. I could almost see him recoil a bit. And he pointed at his heart, and he looked at me very intently, looked at me right in the eyes and pointed at his heart. He kind of leaned forward a little bit, and he said, guru is here, meaning in your heart, in your own heart. And so any guru worth their salt is not going to tell you, I'm going to take you there, or I'm going to do the work for you, or you don't have to do anything, or pay me money, or these kinds of things. A true guru will put it back on you to do the work and give you help here and there, but they know they can't interfere. So it's a fine line. They know that you have your karma. And my Baba came to San Diego because Babaji, Mahamuni Babaji, he called him, in Yogananda called him a Mahavatar Babaji. My Baba said He preferred to call him Mahamuni Babaji, great silent sage. And he spent 12 years with Mahamuni Babaji. And he sent him to San Diego because he said there were some souls waiting for him that he needed to finish with, to finish his providence so that he could be free. So he came to San Diego, and he attracted to him a few souls, not a whole lot. There weren't thousands. He was very kind of private, and he was very strict in terms of not taking money, never asking for money. You know, I would help him. I would sometimes, you know, before I'd see him, I'd take some money, but he wouldn't touch it. And say, put it back on the, was it stand there, you know, a little puja stand, you know, put it there. So it wasn't about that. It was about imparting knowledge so that we could tap into it, helping ourselves, and he would give us subtle guidance. And he said the guidance would be internal. And he was very clear on that. It wasn't anything about external worship. And I want to just touch on the fact that he came from India, so... And I, you know, hung out with Swami Muktananda, and I was into SRF, which was Yogananda, and all of these are from India. And I want to touch on the fact that there's some misunderstandings, even in India. I spent a significant amount of time in India. Even there's a misunderstanding, I think, of religion. You know, there's a lot of, you go into the home, and you know, they'll have Ganesh, you know, the elephant head, you know, or they'll have Divine Mother Kali, Shiva, or, you know, and all throughout India you'll see these statues, and sometimes big Shiva statues or Krishna statues. And so in the West we think they have all of these different gods. But the true understanding is there's only one God. So all of the religions basically are saying the same thing, including Islam, Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism, they're all saying the same things. They just got tweaked a little bit by the misunderstandings of people. in Hinduism, they have all of these different things they call gods, but the reality is that God, in the true understanding, they know that God is unmanifest. God is everything, and God is in everything. If you think about it, in the very beginning, there wasn't anything. So God had to create this universe. And in order to do so, I've already talked about that, creating the polarity and creating this expansion. So in order to understand that, the Hindus, in order to put it into some concept, they create these things that they can look to. Like Ganesh is for overcoming obstacles, that kind of thing. And there's these stories about Ganesh and how he did that. Krishna was like Jesus, you know, he's a manifestation of Vishnu, which is the sun, you know, the person that comes to earth to help guide people. So knowing that Krishna was connected with God, but not God himself really in the ultimate reality, because God himself or herself has no form and God has no sex. That's why in India, oftentimes you'll hear them talk of Divine Mother, or you know. But the reality is, the true understanding is, all of this pantheon of gods and goddesses coalesce into that one true divine energy that has no words, that has no. We can't even talk about it because there's no words that can describe it. So religion is an attempt to put something into words so we can understand it. So that's the bottom line.
Beautiful. Thank you for all of that explanation. I think this is a good time for people, you know, after this call, at some point again the next few days to re-listen to all the information, especially if you're new. So I think with that, Haridas, we are ready for meditation whenever you are.
Okay, great. And if you hear some background noise, my three-year-old grandson is here. We're watching him today.
Wonderful. He can meditate.
No one's being tortured. Yeah. Sometimes it sounds like someone's being tortured. He's just very exuberant.
Oh, of course. Oh, my goodness.
Okay. The very first time that we went into a meditation, I did the three chants that my Baba did before every meditation. And I have a real soft spot for those. So I know I've done a couple of different things in recent meditations, but I'm going to circle back and do those three chants. But I want to stop before each one and describe what each of them means in English. Again, these are in Sanskrit, which is a very ancient language. It goes back literally tens of thousands of years. It's the original language. And my Baba explained to me that Sanskrit, the words actually have letters, and each letter means something. So each sound in Sanskrit actually means what you're conveying. And the yogis actually take it a step further. They're actually silent. They communicate like the yogis, the evolved yogis can sit together and not say anything. And they're actually communicating because they're using a silent yogic form of communication. But it's based on these vibrations that Sanskrit actually puts it into a form that we can use. So this first chant, and there's three of them, three separate ones, and then we'll meditate. This first chant, basically interpreted in English, goes, eternal bliss of the self. And the self is capitalized because the self is your real essence, who you really are. That essence that when you are totally in the moment, and the more you practice being in the moment, the more you get to know that higher self, not the self that's trying to pull you down or make you feel guilty or all of these things. The true self is just divine, and with a capital S, just divine, just joy. totally in forgiveness, totally in peace. And so part of this is learning to be that self. Part of that is just learning to love yourself and forgive yourself and just be. So eternal bliss of the self, highest happiness, only embodiment of knowledge beyond dualism, so that's beyond that polarity, beyond male and female, all of that, vast like the sky, objective of Vedic maxim, that you are, that you are. I mean, you know, I am that. We've meditated on that, and that's the ultimate being in this moment. I am that. You are that divine spark. Absolutely one, eternal, pure, ever stationed, ever witness of all beings in their hearts. I mean, we're all connected. When you're in that place, we're all connected. Polarity. I bow to you, that holy master Sadhguru. Here's the Sanskrit version. Brahma Nandam Parama Sukaram Kevo. The second chant is for peace, and the peace chant. Sorry about my throat today. Let me get a drink of water. The peace chant in English means the aspect of incomprehensible manifestation and experienced manifestation are pervaded by pure consciousness of the ultimate self. Because the ultimate self is just peace, is just joy. The entire manifestation is pervaded by pure consciousness of the ultimate self. Again, connecting all of us together. This entire manifestation is all of us together. The entire manifestation is evolved from and is filled with pure consciousness. If something is taken away from pure consciousness, yet it remains in completeness, which means it can be no, you can't denigrate it. It is complete. It is whole. It is forever. So here goes. Om And hopefully, if you're not already, hopefully you're sitting in a place that you can be relaxed. I like to sit in a cross-legged posture on a slight little small pillow to elevate my coccyx area so that I'm more comfortable. You can be sitting in a chair. You could even be laying down, but the problem with laying down is that the energy can go to sleep rather than a higher consciousness. But certainly if that's where you're most comfortable and where you can be the least aware of your body, do whatever it is where you're not thinking about, because we'll go into a meditation after this third chant, and the key is to be in this moment completely. And for those that haven't been to a prior meditation, there's tricks to being in the moment. And these are yogic tricks. These are ancient. These go back tens of thousands of years. And one of them is just following the breath. And almost every meditation technique has something to do with the breath. And it's focusing on that that helps get you beyond this constant monkey mind, this constant one thought to the next, to the next. If you focus on the inhale and exhale, it allows you to direct your attention to something that just is in this moment. And the more you can do that, you'll get better and better at it. But the closer you can do, like if you can hold to that for even a few minutes, you will begin to tap into that peace that meditation is intended to create in you. Not create isn't a good word because it's there already. Muktananda would always say, realization is just understanding what you really are. It can happen in an instant. You could be sitting there and have this enlightenment experience by really being in this moment. And some of the things you can follow the breath with, like in Buddhist meditation and Zen meditations, it's za zen. On inhale, you say za. And on exhale, mentally, you say zen. And za and zen. And in many of the other yogic practices, there's hong sa. On inhale, hong. Exhale, sa. Some yogis teach hum so. And it doesn't matter so much. Each has that vibration. It could be I am that. And each has a really good vibration. But whatever resonates for you is the important thing. So follow the in-breath with something. It could be hum. I kind of like hum when I inhale. And so I just mentally say hum. And when I exhale, I say sa. So I use hum on the inhale and sa on the exhale. And you don't control the breath. You don't force it. You just watch it. You become the observer. And thoughts will come in. They always do. Just observe that thought. Don't let it upset you, interrupt you. Observe it. And if you observe it, it'll eventually just go away. In fact, you could say, okay, that thought comes in. Okay, I've got to make what I'm going to make for dinner. Say, well, can I put that thought on the shelf? Because that question will still be there after the meditation. Then I'll figure it out. And because you're tapped into yourself, you'll be able to answer any of those questions much more readily than if you're constantly jumping from one thought to the next. Because meditation will attune you to your higher self. It will make you stronger. It will make you more real. It'll bring you to your real self. So the final chant is what my Baba called the universal prayer. And the universal prayer basically is, please lead me from untruth to truth. You're basically speaking to your higher self. You could say you're speaking to God, your higher self, whatever you want, to Jesus, to Buddha, whatever is good for you. But what it is please lead me from untruth to truth, from darkness to light, from death to eternity and immortality. And kindly reveal yourself before us, within us. And here's the prayer in Sanskrit. Asato Ma. This is Divine Mother, because Ma is a mother. Tamaso Ma Jyoti Kama Tu. Just sit. We'll try to go for 10 minutes. And just from a very relaxed place, picture your spine very straight, almost like there's a cord going from the coccyx to the top of your head, lifting you up. So your chin will slightly tuck. Not a deep tuck, just a very comfortable slight tuck. If there's any tension anywhere in your body, observe it just for a second and just relax it. And you may even want to go from your feet and ankles. Relax. Your knees. Release. Thighs, hips. Release. Lower back, buttocks. Let go of any tension that's there. Your spine. Relaxed. Shoulders, throat, jaw. Take one deep breath and just observe the inhale and exhale. Thoughts come. No worries. Put it on a shelf. Let it wait for you to inhale and exhale. If emotions come, just observe them. Just be. Now is your time. This is a sacred moment. This is you spending time with your higher self. We're a little short of 10 minutes, but I'm going to wrap up with the chant that my Baba would say at the end of the meditation. And this one basically is, and when I say bow to you, the real yogis, when they're saying bow to somebody, it's the ultimate self. Muktananda would always say, bow to yourself. And then he would follow it with, it's the self of all. So what you're bowing to is your higher self. So the act of bowing means that you're letting go of all of these negative influences in your life. All of the things that cause you fear, that cause you tension, that cause you discord. You're letting go of that, and you're bowing to your higher self, which is peace, which is love, and which is joy. I bow to you thousands of times. Again, I bow to you again and again. I bow to you at the front, the back, and all sides. And in Sanskrit, namo namaste astu sahasra krita punacha After my Baba would chant that, we would sit a little longer. And then sometimes we would just get up. He would get up, it's over. And we would be very quiet. We would leave very quietly, and nobody wanted to speak. We felt such great peace. And in 30 years, I became friends with these fellow brother and sister disciples, but those times you just were very interior and you didn't want to disturb that. But sometimes he would ask if there were any questions, and he would take questions. I just opened a book of Baba's, and I just opened it to this page. So something that he wrote: if we are to realize anything, we have to perceive the rhythms of pure consciousness through the rates, vibrations, and atoms of inner light and sound. See, this is in meditation. You attune to the pure inner consciousness. So only then can we bypass the trap of concepts, meanings, thought, and intellect. Because in some ways, our own minds become our greatest obstacles. Because our minds want to have some concept. They want to have some meaning or thought or some intellectual explanation that doesn't always exist. A couple of the teachers I really appreciated were Ramana Maharshi and one of his disciples, Papaji. Papaji, and then Papaji, when he left his body, Muji. They all teach, again, it's an extension of just being here now, being in this moment, and observing that place is your higher self, and letting go of all of those concepts, all of those things that have pulled you down and pulled you backwards, and just being in this moment, observing. And their big path was, was, who am I? And if you follow who am I to its ultimate conclusion, there's only silence. Because that can't not be answered intellectually. Who you are is beyond intellect. Who you are is beyond physical. So if you keep following it, you know, eventually you'll say, who is saying who am I? Who is asking who am I? And you can get deeper and deeper with that. So there are many ways to get to that place. It doesn't have to be anything that I taught you, but hopefully I can inspire you to dive deeper. And the thing about meditation, the only way it will work for you is if you do it, and you do it every day, and you make that commitment. That's one of the things that when Baba took me as a student, I had to make a commitment to meditate every day. And it's that commitment. Sometimes you don't want to. Sometimes you think, well, I don't have time. And Baba would say to me, where are your priorities? Are your priorities with the things of the world? Or are your priorities with your true self? So that is what you have to ask yourself. And if you're ready, you will actually commit to it. And you will actually do it every day. And in the beginning, just 5 minutes, don't push yourself too hard. Because you don't want to get to a place where you don't want to do it. You always want to do it. Now I love it. I sit for an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes, sometimes longer. And Baba told me that in India, Kriya yogis, if they don't meditate, they get sick. Because they're so attuned to that place, that pure spirit, that perfect place, that if you kept them from meditating, they're like, you know, they would realize that I don't want to be here. I can't be here. I can't be in this world. So meditation allowed them to be here and be in that place that in Sanskrit is called sahaja, which is natural state. Sahaja means natural state. So the yogi goes out into the world in a state of sahaja. And sometimes the realized yogi goes in a state of sahaja samadhi. They're completely at one with the entire universe, even though they walk in this world, and that's the ultimate. But anyway, Jane, just to wrap, anybody has any questions, I would take them now, or otherwise we'll just we'll just bow out.
I think we would like to bow. No questions. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Namaste. Thank you, Jane, and God bless you, and God bless this entire family, and just love yourself,
yeah,
and take care of yourself.
Indeed.
And hopefully you meditate in some way, and we'll continue these,
mm-hmm,
and continue to give any guidance and any pointers. So my love to all of
excellent.
You.
Excellent. Thank you. I love to
thank
you, too.
Jane.
Thank you, Harita.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Uh-huh.